Welcome to Cascade Church Podcast,
a church we hope is both safe to be and safe to grow.
Enjoy!
Good morning to you all. We're excited. We just kicked off a new message series last Sunday called Overcoming Polarization. And one of the things I think is fun about Cascade and the community is that more than just having different people come and preach, we really like to have lots of different people, thanks Sam, inform our message series and say, hey, I think this would be a great thing to talk about, and then building it out from there. And this morning, we're excited to have the person who originated and came up with this theme of overcoming polarization share with us. And so we're excited to welcome back, if you would welcome, Chelsea Gerlach.
Hey, everybody. I feel like this is the crowd of morning people, am I right? the folks that made it here an hour early. Does anyone want to admit to liking daylight savings? Like, extra hour? There's more of you than I thought! Okay, all right. I can't get to sleep any earlier. Like, I'll try, and I just can't, so I get less sleep on daylight savings time, so it makes me grumpy. But we can disagree on that. You know that... The legislature voted to like get rid of daylight, so twice. The Oregon legislature has voted to get rid of it, but we still have it. So, democracy. we're in an election year where we have some more serious disagreements than daylight savings time. I feel like it becomes more obvious that listen to some things that people are saying and how people are voting. And I don't know if this is you, but I just think, wow, those people are really wrong. Like, how can you say that? How can you think that? Like, it boggles my mind. But all of us at some point have been wrong. All of us at some point have changed our view about things. And so I wanted us to start out, we're talking about having conversations across polarization today. So I wanted to start us thinking about something that we have changed our mind about. It doesn't have to be political, it could be a personal disagreement. And there might be a lot of factors that contributed to that change. But maybe gather with a couple of people next to you and share one thing that was helpful in that change for you. And as always, there's an invitation. If you want to sit silently and reflect, you can do that too. And we'll come back in a few minutes. All right, we'll come back here. I feel like this is a topic we could go on a bit about. Have some relevant experience in the room. So Kurt kicked off this series last week talking about annihilation. That there are some communities where we feel safe and others where we do not, and there can be this impulse, like in order to feel safe, there's this impulse to annihilate the other community. And talked about Jonah in the Bible, that Jonah's like, I actually want nothing to do with those people. I'm not going to help them change. I'm going to go in the opposite direction and leave them to die. And when people have harmed us or harmed others, it can be difficult to have compassion for them. And maybe we don't want them to suffer, but we think the world would just be better if those people were not here. Maybe we don't wish them harm, but we just want them to go away. And that annihilation impulse, we see it in the political realm. We live in a democracy. We have different views, even about daylight savings time. But we can have dialogue. We can vote and majority rules, and then we continue to live together under laws that are established through that process. But right now, civil, respectful disagreement can be hard to find. On the right, we see this, most obviously in the attempt to overturn an election or with disenfranchising urban voters or gerrymandering where election maps are kind of adjusted to water down Democratic voters. So kind of this idea like you're not voting correctly, so we're going to try to erase you from the democratic process. Or on the left, you see this with canceling people who maybe are actively working for progressive causes, share their views, but have made a mistake or are accused of some misdeed and just being immediately pushed out without due process or an opportunity to change. We also see this in infighting in the left. Progressives right now are torn over what's happening in Gaza. Either you're complicit in genocide or you're anti-Semitic. Like, there's two extremes and not a lot of room for a nuanced conversation that acknowledges there's a horrific tragedy that's continuing to unfold precisely because of extremism on both sides. You can say that, like, people have been fighting in that part of the world for generations. You can go back centuries to colonialization. You can go back to the Crusades. You can go back 1,400 years before Christ to when the tribe of Israel escaped slavery and starts invading the land of Canaan. Through all that time, no faction has made a lasting peace by annihilating other groups. Annihilation does not work. It's not what's happening. This is not a reality show where we can vote those other people off the island. We're stuck on this planet together. In this country, we are stuck with people who sometimes we can't stand. Where some of us are bonded in families with people who have vastly different views than we do. And sometimes we have conflicts in our workplace, in our schools, even in our libraries. Like, the most peaceful, wonderful place in our libraries, people are getting really hostile to each other. So I think we need to find better ways to disagree and to live with integrity, not ignoring harm, but also not contributing to it. This is what Jesus challenges us to do in Matthew 5. He says, "You have heard it that it was said, 'You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy.' But I tell you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who mistreat you and persecute you, that you may be children of your Father who is in heaven. For he makes the sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain to the just and the unjust." Now, let's be honest, this sounds really nice, but loving your enemies is super difficult. It's an active struggle for me, which is why I wanted to do a series about it. Some of you, if you've heard me preach before, you might have heard that I went to prison for what the government called eco-terrorism. One of those actions was an arson at a ski resort that was expanding into critical habitat for endangered lynx. And while I was in prison for doing this, I was visited by a family member who did not tell me at the time that she had started going to the same resort regularly because it's her favorite place to ski. She ended up buying a house in that small community and now works for the corporation that I targeted. And I've been going to visit recently, and it's been a struggle. But I feel like God has given me this opportunity to try to hold both the pain in my heart from the impacts that this corporation is still having on local wildlife, and also love this family member who's been really kind and gracious to me. It's required a lot of soul searching, a lot of mistakes, and it's caused me to go into this kind of deep dive of research to learn how to do this better. So I wanted to share some of what I have learned because it feels like this is a skill that all of us can grow in right now. How do we have conversations with people who have opposing views? I think that many of you in this room maybe have dealt with this in some kind of way as well. As we go through this series, we'll be hearing from more folks in the community, different experiences that people have had. But want to just share some of what I have learned and also start out being clear that we're not talking here about situations where there is a pattern of abuse. There's a lot more steps to be taken in that situation before moving towards reconciliation, so that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about having a conversation with someone that is in a different space, maybe politically. So the first thing that we do is check in with ourselves. We assess ourselves. Am I in a place to have this conversation? I did not have that conversation with my family member while I was still in prison. To bring up all of the emotions involved with that disagreement was not the time and space to do that. So one question to ask is there harm that could come from having this conversation? And we might decide that this person's opposing views is causing harm. Their language might be causing harm. Their posture might be causing harm. They might be dehumanizing you or others in how they're talking about an issue. But we can also address, assess, and clarify what harm is. So being uncomfortable doesn't mean that I have been harmed. Disagreeing does not mean harm. Also, there's a spectrum of harm. So someone may be being disrespectful towards me, but I have some choice in how I receive that. I can guard my self-worth from the offhand, unsolicited opinions from ignorant people. I can also clarify who is being harmed. Engaging in a view that annihilates my identity is going to be more difficult than engaging with a view that annihilates the identity of others, people that I care about. So for instance, talking to someone who believes that women shouldn't preach is going to be more charged for me personally than talking to someone who thinks that trans people shouldn't lead worship. I can have both of those conversations, but being aware of my particular privileges and my particular vulnerabilities is helpful. So we ask ourselves, can I engage in this conversation with this person right now with love? And that takes some self-awareness. If my nervous system is activated by my own trauma, my own pain, I'm going to engage that from a place of self-protection. My fight, flight, freeze response is going to go off. I'm not going to be able to reason. I'm not going to be able to access empathy. Those go offline when we're in a trauma response. So then we can't have a productive dialogue. And I'm likely to make things worse. This happens automatically. We don't have a lot of control over it, but we can be aware of when we are in a state of fear and build habits of resiliency so we're less reactive. We can engage in somatic practices like we've done here before, like breathing, to bring ourselves back to this posture of openness. If I'm entering that conversation combative and arguing, that's literally like throwing gasoline on the fire. The other person then is going to get self-protective. They're going to engage with their fight or flight response. Their reasoning is going to go offline. Their empathy is going to go offline. And that fear and anger reaffirmed that the other side, that's you, is bad and dangerous. Even after they calm down, they're going to be thinking about the reasons why they're right. So a heated argument rarely leads to mutual understanding. But the other side, the freeze or flight response of the trauma, of a trauma response, is like when we feel threatened and we decide we're just not going to engage. And this is totally understandable. There are times and places where this is completely appropriate. Also, we can think about if someone says or does something that's offensive and no one challenges them, they get reaffirmed that what they said was fine and that everyone present in the room agrees with their perspective. So we can practice registering disagreement in really simple ways, like just saying, excuse me? which doesn't have to be a big intervention, but you've held integrity to your values. You can always take a step back, take a break, and make a plan to engage with this person or this issue later. So first we assess ourselves, and then we assess the other person. Do they actually want to have this conversation? If they're not interested in hearing your perspective, you're not obligated to give it to them. If they're not going to listen anyway, you're just exposing yourself to more harm. If you try to force your perspective on someone, that's counterproductive. They're going to become more entrenched in their view. So we can also think about the power dynamics between the two of you in this relationship. Conversations are more difficult when there's a big power imbalance. So if you're not at a peer level, you can think about how to shift that for the purposes of this conversation. That might mean choosing a time and a place that's more neutral. It might mean establishing some framing about what the stakes are in this conversation, being clear what is or is not on the line in the conversation. Then we want to find some common ground, find some agreement. And that agreement might just be that you've agreed to try and work out your differences. We have to work together, and we don't want to keep having conflicts. We're going to this family reunion, and we don't want to have a lot of tension. Another place to find a common agreement is through commonly held values. So I know that you value the work that we do together. I know that you value harmony in the family. Maybe I know that you value faithfulness to Christ. If that's something that you share, you can use that as a common ground. So clarify agreement, but also disagreement. Where is the place of disagreement, actually? Often when we have a conflict, we make assumptions about the other side. So you said X, therefore you are why. We label that person. So you must believe all of the things I think that I know about people that are in that category. As you clarify disagreement, you'll probably find more common ground than you might expect. When you do point those out, that helps to build a bond of shared understanding. And be curious. It's good to start with asking questions like, you said or did X, I want to understand more. An open-ended question allows the person to answer however they would like to. Another good question is, what experiences led to this belief? When we have a disagreement, we often want to go to the facts to like prove that we're right. If we, you know, we think like, oh, if this only this person only had like the right information, then they would agree. They would see the truth. Like, this is what scripture says, or this is what science says. And I love doing these research like a deep dive, so I hate that this is true. But the data says that data rarely changes anyone's mind. One factor in that is how siloed information has become. Like, it can be really difficult to establish a shared set of facts. Even if you do have a shared, like, trusted authority, you can use that, but you may not. And people's beliefs are rarely made through rational decision-making, it turns out. Our feelings, our experiences, both individually and collectively, are much more powerful in shaping our beliefs. So in this conversation, we want to move from the abstract to the personal. And then be willing to genuinely listen to what this person has to share. That can be difficult for me when this person is spouting utter nonsense. But you don't have to agree with whatever they're saying. I've had to practice kind of a non-reactive, just open, neutral expression. I'm in the habit of nodding when I'm listening to people, but that can give people the impression that I agree. So I try not to do that. But just a neutral, open expression, listening. What we're trying to do is just giving the person the experience of being heard, being treated with respect and dignity by someone from the other side. This removes some of the fear, some of the anger. It also creates an opening to then share our own perspective. Some people need to be heard before they will listen. And then share your story. Similarly, what led you to having a different belief? Focusing more on your personal experiences than on abstractions or categories or data. This is a place where we can embrace vulnerability because that opens space for empathy. Also, be intentional about how much you want to reveal, because you don't have any control over how that person will respond to your vulnerability. Our motive here is just to show up authentically as our whole selves with integrity. So being honest about our values and beliefs while also respecting the personhood of the other. We're not ignoring harm, but we're also not doing more harm to ourselves or to the other person. The goal is not agreement. If we enter into a conversation expecting that we're going to change that person's mind, that means we have an agenda. We're treating this person as a problem that needs to be fixed. That is another way of annihilating them. And just to be clear, I do think that it's a problem that in the US and around the world, we're seeing a rise of fascism. One aspect of fascism is it says it's okay to use violence to enforce an oppressive imbalance of power and silence the opposition. But when we're thinking about interpersonal relationships, I don't think the best way to counter fascism is with our own intolerance, with our own leveraging of power, or silencing of views that we disagree with. Fascism is fueled by fear of annihilation. So we want to enter into a conversation not trying to convert others, but trying to have an authentic connection. When we have an authentic connection, transformation happens. That's just the nature of humans as social mammals. We impact each other. But that transformation, know that that transformation can move in both directions. That doesn't mean that we suddenly become more sympathetic to white supremacy or patriarchy or corporate greed, but we may have a softer heart. We may have more compassion for others. We may be able to see the world as more complex, more nuanced. Our goal is an experience of mutual respect, of upholding each other's dignity. When we do that, we are embodying human rights. I have learned a lot from a framework taught by Loretta Ross. She is a professor at Smith College, and she has a book coming out on what she has termed calling in. She says calling in is actually a call out done with love and respect, because you're really seeking to hold people accountable for the potential harm that they cause, but you're not going to lose sight of the fact that you're talking to another human being. And so you extend a hand of active love, active listening, to help them maybe stop and think about what they said. I think maybe we have the quote, maybe we don't. There it is. There's Loretta Ross. If you want to learn more about this work, I highly recommend that you check out Loretta Ross. She offers classes by donation. The last class I did with her, she said, I want to be the Walmart of consciousness raising, because she's trying to make it super accessible to anybody that wants to learn. They're on the website, it's just lorettaross.com. There's a lot of resources there. You can sign up for their mailing list. It's not a Christian organization, but I personally have found it to be very helpful tools as we try to live out the instructions of Jesus. When we treat everyone with dignity, we are actively creating a world where human rights are respected. We are living into the kingdom of God where all people have inherent worth. And we're being faithful to Christ, who said to love our enemies. Not for our enemies' sake, actually, but for ourselves, because hatred is toxic to our communities and to our own souls. When we hold on to resentment and ill will, we suffer more than other people do. So as we continue in this election year, my hope is that we would stand firmly on grace for ourselves and for others, that we would be strongly rooted in a spirit of love, and from that foundation that we would have the courage to speak truth for justice. Would you pray with me?
Thanks for listening.
We hope you're able to join us on a Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. in person.
Have a great day.